Support for WPR comes from the Stevens Point area, offering a variety of getaway experiences, itineraries and ideas for beer lovers, foodies, outdoor recreation fans, and more are at StevensPointArea.com.
Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin DNR. Preventing food waste and composting scraps and uneaten veggies, grains, and fruit can help the environment. More dnr.wi.gov by searching food waste.
Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, August the 24th. Should small towns and villages in Wisconsin, those with fewer than 2,500 people, be exempt from the state's Smart Growth Law? The Smart Growth Law requires every community in Wisconsin to have a comprehensive, long-range land use and development plan in place by the end of the decade. We'll talk with two guests this hour who have opposing viewpoints on a provision in the State Assembly's budget bill that would exempt about 1,500 small towns and villages from the Smart Growth Law. The Republican representative who introduced the provision, Mary Williams of Medford, says the law places a financial hardship on some small communities, and some of the communities don't think the state should tell them that they must have a land use plan in place. We'll talk this hour with a guest who agrees with the provision to exempt small communities from the Smart Growth Law, and after 7:30 with a guest who does not. And we will welcome your viewpoints and questions, too, for both of our guests at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Again, should smaller towns and villages, smaller communities in Wisconsin, those with fewer than 2,500 people, be exempt from the state's Smart Growth Law? Our first guest is Art Webb, president of Stop Smart Growth. Good morning.
Good morning.
Why do you want to stop smart growth?
Well, I believe that smart growth, and I want to make sure everybody understands that by smart growth, we mean the smart growth movement, not intelligent urban planning.
Mm-hmm.
We're all for intelligent urban planning. Smart growth, though, the movement, there's many reasons that I would like to stop smart growth. The biggest one is that it's infringement on property rights and the fact that it increases house costs tremendously and stops a lot of people from being able to afford a home.
Yeah. Well, how does it infringe on property rights?
Well, it infringes on property rights. It depends on how deep you want to get into smart growth. But like, if we look at in terms of like what Portland has done with growth boundaries, it incredibly, you know, I mean, some people are allowed to build on their property, and some people are not. It's totally at the whims of these so-called planners who decide who gets to build what where, and you know, property owners have no rights. I mean, they end up sitting back and being told what they can do with their property.
Yeah. But this smart growth law in Wisconsin tells communities to put some sort of long-range plan in place. It doesn't say specifically
right.
What to put in place.
Well, not specifically in terms of the 14 different sections to it, but it does under, I think it's 32001, say that any community larger than 12,500 people do have to create an ordinance allowing new urban developments. And that alone is telling communities how they should grow. And that's not right. But also, it's not right that you take a small community in the middle of nowhere that isn't within 10 miles of any other community and probably never will be, and tell them you have to create this huge comprehensive plan for your 1,000 people in your community. And, I mean, I know in Stoughton we paid $80,000 for consultants to help us build our smart growth, our comprehensive plan, and we already had a master plan already. So you take a small community and force them all to pay consultants to help them create this incredibly complicated plan
mm-hmm.
that is totally useless. I mean, for them, I mean, I can see I mean, I personally cannot see forcing any community. I don't think this state has the right to tell any community you have to create a plan. That, to me, is not the state's job.
Yeah. Don't you fear, though, without some sort of planning in place or standards or guidelines, that there's just going to be all this hit-and-miss stuff and sloppy developments and Wisconsin will start looking like Florida?
Well, in the first place, I'm not against planning, and if Madison and Stoughton and the areas around here want to get a plan and want to get together, if they want to get Dane County, all the communities in Dane County together and create a big plan, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But the state has no right to tell every little tiny community that they have to create a plan that won't affect anyone else in many, many cases. So, and I don't think they should be able to even tell Madison that they should have to do it. And when people like to say, oh, are they going to make more of these sloppy communities? I mean, I'm not sure exactly what you mean by that. You know, a lot of people call the suburbs, total disaster. But, you know, millions of people like living in the suburbs. So some of these sloppy developments that people talk about, you know, people live there and people enjoy those communities. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe they're sloppy to, I don't want to say you, but they're sloppy to some people. But, you know, one man's heaven is, you know.
Right. We got it. We're talking with Art Webb, president of the group Stop Smart Growth, which opposes the law that requires every community in Wisconsin to have a comprehensive land use and development plan in place by 2010. He supports a provision in the state assembly's budget that is currently being hashed out that would exempt 1,500 small towns and villages and communities from the law. Do you? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, August the 24th. Coming up after 6:30, we'll talk with a guest who supports the Smart Growth Law and opposes a provision in the state assembly's budget that would exempt small communities from the law that currently requires them to have a land use plan in place by the end of the decade. Our guest this half hour supports the exemption, and we will welcome your thoughts and questions for him during this half hour. Art Webb is president of Stop Smart Growth, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And please include your first name and your community with your email. To the phones we go, and Mike in Racine is with us first. Hi, Mike, you're on the air.
Thanks for letting me on the air here. I don't even know where to start here. The gentleman here, I'm sure, is well-intended and good-meaning, but the concern that I have is that we balance this kind of discussion against other things that we hear and see in the news every day. And I'll go from events that are just happening today, such as flooding in small communities where people have built their homes in floodplains and in areas that are prone to flood and water damage, we are having water problems in many counties of the state because of unplanned growth, mm-hmm. where people are putting developments in communities and expanding communities at a rate that are not sustainable by their groundwater supplies, as well as we are also hearing churn about the use of biofuels as a way to try to get off weaning ourselves off of petroleum supplies. Well, one of the things about biofuels, they're saying, well, we don't have enough farmland. Well, where's all the farmland going? It's going into unregulated or lightly regulated developments where oftentimes you have actual zoning restrictions where people have to have more and bigger lots.
Mike, hold on. I'll give you a follow-up, but we've got enough to chew on with all of those. But some of the issues that come up if you don't have wise land use planning in place, Art Webb?
Well, people building homes on floodplains has nothing to do with smart growth. And people building communities in areas that can't sustain the water, again, has nothing to do with smart growth. If you want to pass laws, pass ordinances, pass zoning restrictions to keep people from building on floodplains or building huge communities where their water can't support it. That's a different issue, and I'm all for that kind of thing, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about small communities having to write extensive comprehensive plans about everything from their transportation to their housing to, you know, all of these different aspects that they, you know.
Wouldn't that plan for that small community, though, help preserve the farmland that is disappearing?
Well, we can talk about farmland disappearing all we want, but the farmland is not going to disappear anytime soon. The United States is, you know, 5% developed, and the United States Department of Agriculture has said that urban development has no bearing on farmland. There's so much farmland out there, we'll never run out. And if he wants to talk about, we start using biofuels and growing corn, people are saying that we would need every acre of farmland in the United States to grow enough corn. I don't want to get into biofuels either, but the point is that's a faraway thing. I mean, we would never be able to use all the farmland that we have here. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah. Let me ask you, Mike. Why should itty bitty communities of 1,000 people have to have this comprehensive plan in place?
Well, I guess I'm diametrically opposed to everything that he responded to. The reason especially small communities who have limited resources and limited ability to recover from bad planning decisions, they need to have the plan laid out ahead of time so that they can make smart and rational decisions about how to build those ordinances, how to build those zoning laws, and so forth. And when we talk about, I'll stay away from the biofuels, but I'll give an example in the Waukesha County area, is that they have a groundwater problem. They know that they have a groundwater problem, yet when they wanted to develop a large housing development, for commercial reasons, they went into Pabst Farms. So it turns out, as they had been warned, Pabst Farms happens to be one of the major groundwater replenishment areas as farmland, but now they're paving it over and building houses there. So they're aggravating their own groundwater problem with poor planning decisions that are following their ordinances and following their zoning laws, but because they hadn't done or listened to Chief Seattle's admonition to plan out generations ahead about the impact of their decisions today, they are running in and confounding and complicating their own problems.
Yeah. Art Webb, we need to move on and get a response from Art Webb. I mean, Art, what about that?
Well, again, you know, if people do studies and find that there's a groundwater issue with building a huge community, certainly they should stop them from building that community and causing groundwater problems. I mean, I'm not against solving groundwater problems or trying to keep away from groundwater problems, but smart growth in itself and the smart growth law really, I mean, it goes so much further than that. I mean,
well, yeah, but if a smart growth mandated plan were in place, that kind of poor decision wouldn't be made is what Mike's trying to say.
And what I'm saying is, if that community had created their smart growth law saying that this area here is going to be residential or this area is going to be commercial, the state says you have to put in a comprehensive plan. It's not going to come back and say, oh, no, you can't do that because there's a groundwater issue there. Mm. You see, I mean, the smart growth law is not going to help that kind of problem.
Matt in Oshkosh is with us now. Hi, Matt.
Hello. I've served on Land Use Plan Commission since 2001, and I was involved in it for 3 years before that. The Smart Growth Law is well-intentioned, but it is designed poorly. It's written poorly. It steps on property owners' rights way too much. It asks people to predict the future. You can't predict what's going to be in 20 years, but they ask you to predict what's in 20 years. It's actually, I think, well-intentioned, but I believe the forces behind it are trying to simply gain more control over property, and that's why there's such a bad taste in so many people's mouths over this.
Yeah, who's trying to gain control over property rights, Matt?
Well, the Friends of Wisconsin, 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin, was a big push back in, I believe it was the 98 or the 99 budget that got this put into the budget in conference committee. They never allowed the law to see debate in Congress. It was just put in conference committee. And
in the middle of the night.
Yeah, in the middle of the night. It was all done very poorly.
Right. We'll be talking with somebody from 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin in our next half hour, but I was just trying to, regardless of whether it was snuck into law, why does this, you know, take over your property rights?
Let me give you an example of where he's completely right about that. If you take a small town and they create a comprehensive plan, and that plan says, oh, we're going to have this area over here as a residential area and this area over here as a commercial area, and then they submit that plan. 5 years from now, some company comes in and says, I want to move my headquarters here, and I'm going to bring 100 well-paying jobs to your community, but I want to put it right here. It's, 200 feet away from the residential area, 200 feet away from the commercial area. They've got to go to the state and ask the state, can we change our comprehensive plan? Well, who's in control now? Mm-hmm. Who's in control of their land? That small community might not get a company now that's going to bring in a lot of new jobs to their community because they have to go to the state and say, gee, can we change our comprehensive plan so this company can build an office 200 feet from where they, where mm-hmm. you want them to?
Mm-hmm.
No, who's in control? The whole thing is you're moving the decision-making about land use up the chain, up the ladder. From if something happens and I want to build something somewhere, I'm no longer going to go to my city councilman and say, I want to get this changed or I want to do this. I'm going to have to go to the state and say, I want the comprehensive plan changed. Now, that's utterly absurd.
Let's go to David now in Vernon County. Hi, David.
Hi. Out here in Vernon County, we've been having this debate for years over this kind of planning, and not all groups, not all areas have done this, but the vast majority of these communities have been dragging their feet and not wanting to do any for exactly the reason you're talking about, oh, it's going to infringe on our property rights. Well, now we're getting a large containment hog farm stuffed down our throats, which nobody in this community wants, and the board is so far letting it go, and the reason behind this thing getting in here is because, well, there's nothing we can do about it because we don't have anything in place in order to deal with it. So they've dragged their feet all the way to the point where now we have a problem.
Mm-hmm. Art Webb?
Well, again, if that small community wants to create zoning to keep them out or go through the process to keep them out, they can do that without creating a comprehensive plan. The state is not stopping that hog farm and will not stop it through smart growth. If they want to stop those types of things, they can do it without smart growth. It's been done, in the past, and it can be done in the future.
Yeah. So in our final minute with you, Art Webb, you want the legislature that's hammering out a state budget to accept this provision to exempt small towns and communities from the smart growth law?
Definitely. Definitely. It's a step in the right direction.
You'd like to see the whole thing go away.
I very much would like to see the whole thing go away. Yes, I would.
Yeah. Well, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you very much for being with us.
Okay, and I'd like to direct people to our website, which is stopsmartgrowth.org.
Okay, you did. Thanks very much.
All right.
Art Webb, president of Stop Smart Growth. Coming up after 6:30, we will be welcoming in Steve Hinneker, who is executive director of 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin, to get his perspective on his pro-smart growth perspective. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. This is the Ideas Network. Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:36. I'm Joy Cardine, and we'll get a different viewpoint in this half hour on the provision in the State Assembly's budget that would exempt some 1,500 small towns and villages in Wisconsin from having to develop a long-range comprehensive land use and development plan as required by Wisconsin's Smart Growth Law. We heard from a guest in our last half hour who said the state shouldn't be telling individual communities what to do saying that this smart growth law, which requires these plans to be in place by 2010, would infringe on property rights, among other things. Our guest in this half hour will tell us why this is a needed and good idea. And again, we will welcome your questions and reactions. Do you want small communities exempted from this smart growth law or not? And why or why not? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Steve Hinneker, Executive Director of 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Let me have you talk a little bit first right off the bat, because we heard in our last half hour that your group snuck this into state law, you know, in the wee hours of the morning back in the late 90s. What was this law intended to do, and what happened with this law?
Sure. Well, first, let's go back to how the law got to be a law. Mm-hmm. It wasn't snuck into the budget. A lot of bills, unfortunately, now are put into the budget, but the legislation that led to the comprehensive planning law actually was several years in the development. Mm-hmm. Many hearings, there was a governor's task force on it, went around the state, gathered opinions. Legislative hearings were held repeatedly on this, and finally the bill was incorporated in the budget, but it had enormous public debate. But behind the law, what's going on is a couple of things. First of all, Wisconsin is growing. It's growing by a million people in the next 25 years, and that will put tremendous strains on local budgets, on natural resources, on farmland. And so what the Smart Growth, Wisconsin Smart Growth Law says is communities, you should plan for this type of growth. You need to figure out for yourself how this growth might affect your community. And rather than being top-down, this law is actually as grassroots as it can get. The plans have certain components that need to be incorporated, because too often planning is done in isolation. For example, somebody will plan for a highway without planning for public works infrastructure, or plan for residential development without thinking about other community aspects. So the law unifies the planning process and puts it as a comprehensive plan, so that all of the local components of land use are considered at once. And secondly, most importantly, what the law does is it brings everybody to the table. It makes sure that planning isn't done by a committee that meets secretly, or by developers that come in and exercise their will in a town. Rather, it is from the bottom up. And I need to clarify one thing that your earlier guest said, that he was talking about you know, what happens if a community adopts their smart growth plan and a developer comes in and wants to locate in another location. And your previous guest said that that decision needs to go to the state, and that's inaccurate. The decision is still made very locally. If the community wants to amend its comprehensive plan to allow development in the area that the developer wants to, that's a local decision that can be made locally without any interaction with the state at all. Mm. So this is a bottoms-up type of approach, and I'm really glad to hear. I think, most people are in favor of sensible planning, and most people are against top-down mandates. And I think that, you know, a lot of the opposition to the smart growth law stems from this feeling that somehow the state is imposing its will on the community, and really, both the intent and, I think, so far, everything that we've seen on the follow-through is that it is a bottoms-up, a local grassroots decision on planning.
Yeah. Well, let's talk specifically about this provision that was put into the Assembly's budget by Republican Representative Mary Williams of Medford that would exempt small towns of some 1,500 small towns who have populations of fewer than 2,500. That this, she says, places a financial burden on these small towns.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, that those towns represent 87% of the land area of the state of Wisconsin. So while, you know, Wisconsin is a largely rural state with a few urban centers, so the effects of this amendment would be profound as far as what it means for Wisconsin's landscape, because it's almost 90% of the state's land area that we're talking about. Secondly, when it comes to comprehensive planning at the local level, the cost can be dramatically overstated. There is a comprehensive planning grant program that awards communities grant dollars to help them go through the planning process. Secondly, you know, a plan for Stoughton may cost $80,000, while a plan for a much smaller community could cost a lot less, and always does cost a lot less than something like an $80,000 program that Stoughton had. But the other thing to think about is, what are the costs of poorly planned development that occurs in the absence of a plan? You know, local infrastructure, if things are poorly planned, it disrupts farming opportunities in some communities. It increases local levies for new transportation infrastructure or municipal waterworks and things like that. The planning process brings back, I think, all of these local costs and puts them in on the table at the same time the decisions are being made where to grow. So the comprehensive planning process leads people to just identify all of the aspects that are impacted when a decision to develop in an area are considered.
Yeah. Well, it seemed to me that our guest in the last half hour, Art Webb, was saying, you know, we're smart enough in these small communities to be able to take all that stuff into consideration when making these decisions. We don't need the state to tell us to develop this plan and spend money on developing this plan.
Well, I think that I would agree that certainly the local communities are smart enough. That's why we developed this law, because and that's why we call it smart growth, because it's relying on local leaders to develop their plan. The problem is that they're not equipped with the tools to adequately deal with some development plans that come in. If you have a part-time administrator of a small town, the person is certainly smart enough to understand all of the things that are going on with a development project, but they may not have the time or the resources to deal with somebody who is coming in, and their full-time job is to get a development, perhaps in an area that a town doesn't want. The law here allows people to use their local resources, their local input, and come up with a plan to guide them in the case where a developer comes in and wants to make a development that may not be in the best interest of the town, or maybe it could be better situated in a town or a village simply through better planning. It isn't to stop growth. We know growth is coming. There is no way that we can stop, or do we even want to stop the future growth of Wisconsin with a million new people coming in, with the jobs and the growth in the economy that will bring with it. We just want to make sure that it occurs in a way that best meets the needs of the people who are living here now.
We're talking with Steve Hinneker, Executive Director of 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin, who likes Wisconsin's smart growth law and does not like a provision that's in the Assembly's version of the state budget that would exempt small towns and villages and communities from this smart growth law. The law requires every community in Wisconsin to have a comprehensive, long-range land use and development plan in place by the end of the decade. This provision in the state budget would exempt towns and villages that have fewer than 2,500 people from this mandate. What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 13 minutes before 7 o'clock. Coming up after 7, we'll talk with a guest about the latest with Iraq, the intelligence report that was released yesterday, and Senator John Warner's call to start bringing troops home by Christmas, and what that's going to mean for the debate. That's coming up after 7 o'clock. talking about smart growth during this hour, and there's a line for you, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, getting two sides to the debate over whether small towns and villages in Wisconsin should be exempt from the smart growth law, which requires every community in Wisconsin to have a long-term land use and development plan in place by the year 2010. Dale in Sister Bay has been waiting. Thanks for waiting, Dale. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to say I disagree with the smart growth plan, because in the village of Sister Bay, we're actually going through this whole process. And where we live is, it's a small rural area. The only development is in the area that we live in particularly, and there's a large 10-acre lots, there's some 80-acre lots, there's some 50-acre lots. And the plan that's on the table right now is to basically, because of the smart growth plan, is to basically put it in 1-acre lots, put sewer and water through it. And I think what happens with that is, like, as a landowner, if I want to sell it, the potential landowner is going to look at that and say, I can't buy that land because they're going to put a development there. And then that discourages the green space, the open area. Like right now on the table, the sewer and water for us would be, we're looking at 1,300 feet of sewer and water. And I also disagree with what the gentleman said earlier about the communities not having the resources. We in Sister Bay use Door County Planning. We use there's economic development. We're actually using purchasing some land on the water and using JJR, a Madison engineering firm, to help us come up with our plans. So I think there's a lot of resources, and I think the villages are smart enough to come up with their own plan.
Well, and I, Dale, what I don't understand is that your village is coming up with a plan that you don't like. So why is smart growth the law to blame for that?
Because the smart growth plan, they have to come up with a plan in the areas that are open. And what happens with that is it imposes a plan on this land, whereas if we could keep it open, in potentially selling the land to just prospective landowners that want to open it. As an example, there was a 10-acre parcel right alongside of us, and the gentleman bought the house or bought the land. He went and had no idea that the plan was already sort of in place. And then once he had got his building permit, he found out that the plan was in place.
All right, I think I get it. Steve Hinneker, the state is telling Sister Bay it has to come up with some sort of plan for this open space, and Dale doesn't think that's right?
Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, I didn't mean to imply that no towns or villages had the resources to conduct their own plans. Certainly they do. Many, many do. Going from the biggest, the city of Milwaukee, to many villages and towns, they are equipped. But they are in the minority statewide. So I just want to make sure that everybody understands that these are resources that are made available to towns to open up the process to all and have the resources made available for planning. I'm not familiar with the Sister Bay plan. If the local will is to have an open area set aside for development, that's something that, we're not going to come in and say, no, you have to do it a different way. That's locally generated. I would advise the caller to continue to be involved in that process, and if he would like more resources on how to become better involved and perhaps change the plan to his liking, we can help him figure out ways to do that.
Yeah, this is something that the Sister Bay is doing. It's not something that the smart growth law is telling Sister Bay to do.
Right, this is a local decision that's not top-down. It's not coming from 1,000 friends. It's not coming from the state. It's coming from the people who live in the area.
But if it doesn't, the question I have is, if they don't put something in place like, oh, we're going to have 1-acre lots here or 5-acre lots there, somewhere down the line, are they not going to be in trouble? Like what the caller said before, then you have to go back to the state. And I think that what happens is you discourage people from just keeping open lots, because if the plan is to have 1-acre lots or 5-acre lots, and then when a person goes to sell it, the potential landowners likes the rural area of it, but then says, well, on the smart growth plan, which may or may not happen, just because you have to have some kind of growth plan. And I think the logic of the small community is to go, well, let's put this in place because this is the only area for development. But then if it never happens, then if a person wants to sell that land, you look at all the possibilities, and so, you know.
Yeah, Dale, I'm sorry. It's getting a bit too specific here, but again.
Well, let me just go to that for a second. First of all, you don't have to go back to the state to amend the law. That's a misunderstanding of the law. It's a local decision. No, they don't have to. There's nothing that requires the plan to, say, 1 acre or 5 acre or 8 acre lots. In fact, philosophically, we would be opposed to the 1 acre and 5 acre lot. We do like smaller or more clustered development. But if the caller is interested in some strategies that he could use to make changes there, we'd be happy to work with him.
Yeah. Dale, thanks very much for the call. I have other callers that have been waiting. Gene in Iron County. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm opposed to this plan. I'm up here in Iron County, and I live in a small town. And for us to make plans what's going to happen to this small town 20 years from now, I don't know. And I'm confident the people in this town 20 years from now, if situations come up, they'll handle it to suit themselves. I can't see me making a prediction 20 years from now what's going to be best for this town when I don't even know what's going to happen in 20 years.
Yeah.
Let the people 20 years from now, I'm sure confidence will do what's best for the town. We don't need somebody, all these plans going on and tying up and making rules that we're locked into. That's just going to be frustration later on down the line.
Yeah, what about
Thank
that,
you.
Steve? Yeah, thanks. What about that, Steve Hinnaker?
Yeah, no one's asking towns to plan 20 years in advance. That's too long of a horizon. Of course, no one knows what's going to be happening in 20 years. We do know that there's going to be a lot more people in the state in 20 years. We're looking at a 10-year horizon. And I think that, you know, it's good to start identifying the parts of a community that you don't want to have developed and look at areas that would benefit the community if they were developed. And the time to start is now, not after a developer comes in and says, this is where I want to be.
Thanks, Gene. Noel in Washington County. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I think an important thing to remember with smart growth and is that it is about how we want to plan our communities. You know, I live in an agrarian society, or an agrarian community that has elected very much to keep it agrarian because there's large farms in that area that want to preserve what is theirs. But yet the small town is growing. We have our first strip mall, you know, that houses a bank and a restaurant. It's growing. I think smart growth, we need to remember that it's about how we want our communities to grow. And, yeah, we should be able to look 20, 30 years out and say, I would like this to remain, and I would like this to be there in 10 years. This is about planning. It's not about what someone dictates that we have and have to do with it.
Yeah. Steve Hinnaker?
I think the caller did a better job than I have on some of these points. I agree.
Yeah. Craig in Cedarburg, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. One of the couple of disadvantages right off the front is the fact that you have local communities, especially the smaller towns and such, that a lot of people don't really pay attention to what planning is going on. And so when they're going through the zoning and master plan or anything, you know, and that type of element, it's usually until somebody's development is knocking on somebody's backyard that somebody may, you know, stand up and pay attention. But all that stuff is happening way up front. And the overall process for planning is there to make for communities to take advantage of it. But with the smart growth thing, when you get into that and you start looking at all the ramifications of that, there, a smaller town, for example, if you go off on yourself on your own and you maybe you have a smart group of individuals that you already have a plan in place, and so you build out the comprehensive plan based upon your local community's desires and such, and you don't want to join hands with, say, a county or other communities around the area, that those communities, if they are in a larger proportion to yours, they can actually come in and say, well, your comprehensive plan doesn't fit ours, so we're changing everything, and so really you kind of lose out on the thing. So then you end up having to join these groups, and not only do you have to join them and deal with the politics of going through that whole element to make sure that everybody's in alignment between all these different mm-hmm. communities, but the advantage to some degree is that you help, you know, the dollars, as you had mentioned, that you get from the state, it gets distributed for the maps and other things. So it really, there's a lot of issues at stake in this whole thing.
Yeah, and we only have about a minute to go. Steve Hinneker?
Well, actually, I think what the caller is talking about is a justification for continuing the existing law, because what's happening, if the towns are denied the resources to do their comprehensive planning, then the larger units, the counties, will do the planning for them. And I think that's taking away some of the local aspects of what's intended behind the smart growth law, that it becomes as local as possible. Counties are bigger than 2,500, so they may come in and do some of the planning instead of the towns. And we think that we need to have all of the units of government involved, not just the larger ones.
Well, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Steve Hinneker, Executive Director of 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin, speaking in favor of Wisconsin's smart growth law and against a provision in the Assembly's version of the state budget that would exempt small towns and communities from this law that requires them to have a comprehensive land use planning plan in place by 2010. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing the hour, to Karen Prager for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.